ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Anjali Midha. Anjali is the co-founder and CEO of Diesel Labs, a content analytics company that addresses the toughest questions facing media companies today: what to produce, where to distribute it, and where to market it. Before starting Diesel Labs, she was the global director of media research at Twitter, which she joined via Twitter's acquisition of Bluefin Labs, a pioneer of social TV analytics. Prior to Bluefin, she was VP of strategy and analytics at Digitas. Anjali, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
I've wanted to properly interview you since I met you almost 3 years ago. You're a serial entrepreneur, a female founder who's developed some really special tech with Diesel. But first, for listeners who aren't familiar with Diesel, you closed on another round of financing during a pandemic, no less. Can you share a bit about what Diesel does, sort of your elevator pitch?
Absolutely. Diesel Labs is a content analytics company, and we're right now supporting major media companies in the US with some of the toughest questions that they're facing. For example, what should they produce and how can they curate amazing content portfolios to keep their subscribers and viewers engaged?
That is so interesting. And so who do you primarily partner with? Is it legacy media companies, streamers, production companies?
It's all of the above, actually. And what's fascinating, and I'm probably getting ahead of you a little bit, but what's fascinating is we work with all different types of media companies, and everyone right now is kind of in a different state of maturity in terms of how they think about their content. But that's one of the most fun things about being on the startup side is that we get to work with the legacy folks, as well as what I would call the tech company side, the folks that, you know, have become media companies, but started off with their roots in technology. And it's an amazing space to be in right now.
Fantastic. One of the recurrent themes on the podcast over the last 10 months has been that COVID-19 accelerated trends that were already in the works. At the top of 2020, there was a lot written about the quote unquote streaming wars and where things were headed. But nobody could have imagined that we'd have a jetpack strapped on to get there. And this really hits you where you live, because each of your client constituencies touch that content landscape in a different way and have different motivations and goals. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the landscape, the macro changes, and how Diesel intersects with that and the needs of your different constituencies. First, let's talk about legacy entertainment companies and content. How have they traditionally used research?
Absolutely. The neat thing about the traditional media companies is that they've been doing this for decades and they've been using data for decades. So there's a great appetite within these traditional media companies to always be thinking forward, looking forward, trying to think of creative and innovative ways to help support better decision making, which is fantastic. It's sort of a perfect foundation for folks like myself who like to come in and innovate with data and find new and creative ways to make the whole industry smarter.
Right. So they are changing. You know, they've used data for a long time, but they're changing the way they're using it. And there's also information that their own data lakes aren't providing for them. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And the cool thing is that the legacy TV companies or media companies, I should say, are always looking ahead to see what they could or should be doing with data. And right now, there's actually kind of an interesting disparity, I would say, or there's two sides of the coin where we see some of the folks on the streaming first side of the world. So these are the companies I was talking about earlier that kind of started with their roots more on the technology side. They're using data as well, but fundamentally in a very, very different way. And if I had to oversimplify the way that the streamers are using data, it's much more data science and modeling oriented, whereas the traditional media companies are sort of still wrapping their arms around how to integrate that type of sophisticated modeling, because they're kind of growing up in it, as opposed to, you know, it's kind of the difference between two generations, if you want to think of it like that. They're learning how to use the data versus having been born with it.
Right. Right. Well, it's an interesting parallel with the digital natives, right? The, and the audiences, and who's digital native and who maybe is getting there, and using it in their own special way. Who still has the VCR clock blinking? Right. And I've just dated myself because nobody has even VCR clocks anymore.
I won't tell if you won't tell.
Well, yeah, it was my parents. It wasn't me. What are some of the things that their own lakes of information aren't providing them? And this, again, let's just focus purely on the legacy people, because obviously the platforms have a lot of data. But if you were a broadcaster or a cable company, what are the things that you're looking outside for? What are the things that you bring to the table?
Absolutely. And it's funny because I get a variant of this question almost all the time, which is, you know, why do media companies need help or support from companies like Diesel Labs? And the way that I answer it always is, you know, each of these companies, whether you're on the legacy or the traditional side or, you know, the streaming side of the world, they have a phenomenal amount of data. It's pretty fascinating once you start to dig in and start to understand the robustness of the information that they have. But here's the funny thing. I'm not really going to be able to go in, let's say, to a streaming company and tell them something about their audience that they maybe don't already know, because they have the best data in the world on their own subscribers, what they're doing, what they're watching, how they move between content within a streaming platform itself. But the minute that person changes the channel or changes their app that they're on or bounces between traditional media to streaming media and vice versa, that's where things start to get really hazy for almost all the companies we're talking about. And that's where companies like Diesel Labs can come into the picture, because what we're doing is building basically a view of the entire content ecosystem, and not just limited to shows and movies either. We go well beyond that into the world, if you'll believe it, of things like podcasts and books and comic books and what have you, because we know that it's that comprehensive picture that's going to give us the best chance to understand how and where audiences are consuming different kinds of media. And that is ultimately what's going to help support that sort of big multi-billion dollar question that we talked about at the beginning, which is, what do I make? How much do I spend on content?
Right. So you're capturing the world as it appears from the outside, because obviously you don't have the gut, you don't have the innards that an Amazon might have or a Netflix might have, but you can see everything that a consumer could see. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. That's a very fair way to put it. It's sort of like we are the agnostic third party that sits on the outside and listens to all the unsolicited consumer engagements, posts, tweets. All of that data comes into our system, and we're basically organizing it and then running it through our own data science models to understand how are media preferences and behaviors changing over time. A good example, and a reasonably timely one, for example, one of the ones we just noticed is, you know, when people finish watching a show, they share that information with their social networks or their friends and family. They say, hey, you got to check this out. This show, you know, amazing. It's definitely worth watching. Mm-hmm. With Bridgerton came out on Christmas Day on Netflix. People got to the end of that show and were hungry for more. So the conversation, the nature of the conversation was, what else should I watch now that I've finished, binge watching Bridgerton? And the communities started to spin up. Okay, well, here's where you need to go. You need to go check out the PBS Masterpiece Classics, which at the moment are only available through PBS's own app or through Amazon Prime Video. So here's a really good learning that Netflix served up this amazing piece of content that engaged so many millions of people. People wanted more. They couldn't really find exactly what they wanted on Netflix, so they may have bounced over to another platform. These are the things that Diesel is uncovering, you know, minute by minute, day by day, and making available to all the media companies so that they can get smarter about planning content portfolios and strategies for the long term.
And that's fascinating, because let's say I'm PBS and I didn't have to invest in Bridgerton, but I can benefit from it.
Absolutely.
If I know that that conversation is happening. That's fascinating. So let's talk a little bit about these, the streamers. In our previous conversations that we've had, we've talked about if these companies are tech companies, entertainment companies, consumer product companies, cloud storage delivery companies.
All of the above.
Well, all of the above. And that given that, what a win for them is can be different, can't it?
Absolutely. So I kind of look at the world. There's two different kinds of companies, and it's not breaking down sort of cleanly on the like legacy traditional versus streaming in this framework. It's looking at companies that for whom content is their primary product versus looking at companies for whom content is a means to sell other things or grow subscribers for other parts of their business. So two different examples of that might be, you know, for example, you can take, you know, a traditional television network who, you know, may not be vertically integrated with cable set-top box companies or mobile phone companies. They're just in it for the content itself. Then you flip that around and you look at companies like Amazon, for example, or even, you know, you can even take, for example, Comcast. NBCU is a good example of one of the traditional companies. These are companies that do a lot of other things, and content is kind of one piece of it, if that makes sense. And so depending on the question and depending on how we're looking at the world, sometimes we'll divide the world up as, hey, these are traditional and these are streaming. Sometimes we divide the world as these companies, like even Netflix, for example, are focused on content for the sake of content, whereas there's other firms who are doing content kind of as a part of a much, much bigger portfolio of revenue producing activities.
Right. How they view their product, how they assess success, who they think of as the competition, what they want to achieve, and that's going to be different. And so the ask they come to you with, I imagine, is different. Yes?
Absolutely. And it can even be different sometimes day to day, depending on what decision is in front of a, you know, a particular client or partner of ours. So one day it might be, you know, how do I invest my X numbers of billions of dollars in original content? But then sometimes the question is, what should I license to support that? How do I create or curate a portfolio for this particular target audience that I'm trying to win over? And, you know, sometimes it's how do I attract as many new subscribers as I can, because that's the kind of flavor du jour. Or it can be, how do I further engage my pre-existing sets of subscribers because I want to increase the lifetime value of said subscribers. So I'm afraid that probably doesn't do justice to your question, because all I've done is kind of made the question even kind of more complicated or expanded it. But I would say all of those things are important depending on sort of what angle, you know, these companies are grappling with on a day-to-day basis.
Well, let me, you know, the third sort of, if we're dividing the pie into very chunky pieces, the third piece is the production companies who are independent from these outlets, but they're creating content and they want to sell it to these different constituencies, all of whom have different goals. And so in some ways, if I'm at a production company, I might come to you to help me spin up the same piece of content differently or understand what would be appealing. I mean, I guess maybe what I'm really asking is, I understand the platforms and the broadcasters and the cable companies who might come to you to understand their big acquisitions and how they're going to place things. But if I'm a producer of content, how do I team with you? What do you help me know how to do?
Absolutely. It's kind of funny. There's the short answer, and then there's the sort of the longer answer. The short answer is, a lot of times these production companies don't always get as much feedback from their distribution partners as they would like. So there's kind of a, we want to know what our distribution partner knows, or the network who bought our show knows, or the streaming platform who bought our show knows. And so that's one, that's kind of the short answer. But the longer answer is, if you're a production company and you want to, for example, put a proposed project in front of one of these streaming platforms or television networks, you want to position that as being as helpful as possible to their overarching business. So you want to be able to come in there and say, this is going to help you keep those Bridgerton people super duper engaged, or this piece of content is going to help you go after this particular target market that we know that is out there that could bring in more subscribers for you. And so that's kind of where Diesel enters the picture again for the production companies, because we can help with both those things. We can help you evaluate how your content is doing and how that might benchmark against other content on the same network, which gives you a little bit of leverage, but also helps with that whole sales narrative. And the best part is that when you have the two negotiating parties both kind of looking at a currency, if you will, or the same information, it helps to actually streamline those conversations quite substantially. So that's some of what we're hearing from our partners, both on the distribution side and on the production side.
Right. So, you know, we've talked in very big, broad terms. So let's drill down a little bit. If I'm trying to find white space, you know the universe of what's out there. Can I just come to Diesel and say, where's the white space? I mean, how do you give unique answers to each client?
Well, so the funny thing is, and I want to make sure it's really clear, is that I, being a data and analytics person, I don't believe that data is going to completely take the role of art and creativity and innovation in sort of the production of content. There's no way that an algorithm is going to tell you that if you put, you know, if you set a show in, you know, a couple decades ago, and if you make it about chess, and if you, you know, if you do these particular things, that it will necessarily be a hit. An algorithm's not, at least not yet. I shouldn't say never, because we know how fast technology changes, but I don't think we're quite at the point where an algorithm's going to be able to tell you that. But what we can do is we can take elements of projects and the ideas that are being put together. We can attach, you know, who's producing it, what genre is it, which distribution network will it be on. We can put all these other pieces together, and we can look at histories essentially to say that there's a good likelihood that it's going to perform XYZ or target this type of audience profile. And that, in support of all the amazing creativity that comes out of Hollywood and the studios already, makes for a very powerful combination of information. So finding quote unquote white space is always tough, because you don't know what you don't know, right? That's always going to be a little bit tough. But when new ideas come to the table, we can use proxies to say, hey, we think this will be, you know, successful at the level of, you know, this other program or set of programs or set of movies, to be able to provide context, just so that people have at least some information to either gut check the decision they've already made or to help drive that decision.
Well, I mean, I suppose one of the things when people are pitching, oftentimes, it, you know, it's Law and Order meets X-Men or some rando, right? You know, two properties that people understand, to create a third property, which is brand spanking new.
Yep.
Is that what you're talking about in terms of to test an idea, where you would have, it's like this and that, and then you look at how this and that perform? Or is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say at a high level, that's almost exactly what it is, except we have so much more information available to us than just, you know, this show meets this show these days, at least, right? We have who are the actors and actresses? What's the genre? What time of year is it going to come out? What day of week is it going to come out? What platform or what channel will it be on? When you add up all that information, you do arrive at least some idea of where a particular piece of content has the potential to land. Now, of course, there are too many variables. I'm not asserting that we're going to predict with 100% accuracy where a particular program might land. Things surprise us all the time. But this is part of the process of growing with the media industry, because content is being produced now at such a massive scale,
right,
that it's no longer about, hey, we have this amazing, you know, these amazing three ideas, and we have three slots to fill in our fall, you know, TV schedule. It's not about that anymore. Netflix put out, they're going to have a brand new blockbuster movie every single week this year. And, right. But at the same time, it gives you a sense for the breadth and the scope of the content that's being produced. And when you're starting to talk about content at that scale, that's when I think companies like ours can start to help with that decision-making process, because it's not just about deciding to make one or two or 10 movies. We're literally talking about 52 movies that they decided to make for this year. And that's on top of everything else that they have going on. And that's just one platform also, to be clear.
Well, right. And I mean, one of the things I'm curious about is we've touched on what to produce. We've touched on the different distribution platforms working around what to produce and how somebody mm-hmm. might sell into these different places, but where to market it. If I'm at a network and I'm sitting there, can I use this service to help me think about how to connect the dots for the consumer, how to market the material?
Absolutely. And that's kind of, it's a neat, almost side effect of our data, actually, because what we're doing is creating, you know, we have every atom of content in our system, which means we know at a unique level all the people who are engaged with every single piece of content out there. Thus, we can reliably also say, okay, well, if you do have, I forget your example, Law and Order meets, I can't
X-Men.
Remember. X-Men. Law and Order meets X-Men. Yes. What we can do is we can take the people who are already authentically engaged with those two story styles, if you will, and say, this is where you can find them. But we can also go one step further. We can take, you know, individually as themes, we can take the Law and Order, maybe the procedural style content, and we can look at that sort of larger audience and say, where might we find these people? And then where might we find fans of comic book content or what, you know, of course, this is just a crazy example, but you get my point, which is right. Finding those people becomes very easy within the span of content. The challenge is becoming that a lot of the places to find people these days are in non-ad supported arenas. Right. So I know we've talked about Netflix a lot already in this conversation, but take Disney Plus, take right. some of these up and coming, you know, really, really big impactful platforms. They're not, you know, they're not open for advertising, at least as of the time that this podcast was recorded, right? I should right. always preface it, because we never know when things are going to change. So finding them becomes actually even more challenging. Now we need to actually not just look and find where we can find those people, but where can we find them in places that are ad supported, and maybe not just on linear television, but in Instagram, in Twitter, in YouTube, in these digital spaces where they're also spending their time. And I just mentioned a couple of the biggest platforms. You know, it's worth acknowledging that there are certainly tons and tons and tons of other spaces as well that become really interesting platforms for that type of messaging.
Two questions. One is another use case I'm curious if you've been asked about, which is for the production companies who have, let's say you've sold in a show to a platform and it's second season negotiations, can you help them buttress or support, this is what we've done for you? A lot of these, you know, platforms grade their own homework, if you will. And so proving your benefit, you know, you need some data, you need some ability to prove it. And are you able to help them arm them for those conversations?
Absolutely. It's funny. One of the things that ultimately has become pretty important out there, and I sometimes don't like this word because it comes with a lot of baggage, but this idea of influencers, people out there within social media who are particularly active and vocal about what they're watching or what, you know, what we should go watch or you should go watch, you know, it's a mixed bag. I know people in the industry have, you know, there's a lot of varying feelings about the practice of looking at influencers. But at the end of the day, with the amount of content that's coming out right now, breaking through the clutter is incredibly tough. So right. you can either take the approach, and this kind of goes back to your previous question, you can either take the approach of doing super innovative, creative new marketing strategies. Like, for example, you know, there have been concerts inside Fortnite, which is a video game.
Right, right.
There have been movie screenings inside of Fortnite. There's a new Instagram Live program that is essentially brought to you by, you know, a particular spirit brand.
Right.
It's called, the program in question is called Verses, and it's this, you know, interesting content. But what we're starting to see is brands are either getting involved in the content creation process itself, or they're doing innovative new marketing things. But if you can't kind of do one of those avenues, which they tend to be on the more expensive side, then you're kind of back to what I might consider, you know, a more traditional approach, which is if you're a producer and your show is producing, you know, an over index of social engagement, well, that is just, you know, that can be as valuable as, for example, the rating point itself, which we all know is still one of the more important currencies out there, because networks do want vocal, engaged people so that when they put the next trailer in front of them, they all go off and talk about it to their friends. This is sort of one of the techniques, I think, that at least for the time being is going to continue to be important. And just anecdotally, we see, at least here at Diesel, that one of the ways to drive influencers, one of the ways we've seen the platforms and networks out there do it most successfully, almost always comes back to the amount of video content, teasers, trailers, previews, things that you're making available for people to pass around. That's it's almost like an asset you're giving your audience to help them make their own content more engaging as well. So just as a fun fact, I guess, one of the things we see coming out of the platform.
Right. Well, switching gears, and this is sort of the last question for our conversation, and that goes to the structure of your company and how people actually, nuts and bolts, interact with you. How much is bespoke? How much is self-serve on demand? And if it's self-serve, can it be misinterpreted, or are there pretty good guardrails? How does somebody actually, I'm a client, I'm teaming with you, how does that work?
Absolutely. So we are a SaaS company, which means we have a complete kind of, you know, full product suite that any of our clients can come and gain access to. And we're very, you know, hands-on with our clients as well. We like to be very supportive. And, you know, I get questions all the time, like, is this the right way to think about it? Is this how I can use it? Does this help support this decision? And we're here for all of our partners and clients when it comes to that kind of stuff, because a lot of people are using data for the first time in those contexts. Right. There's kind of a flip. It's like, I used to get questions in my past life of, this show's already been greenlit. We know it's coming down the pipeline. We have to figure out how to make it work. That's kind of the way we used to get questions. And now we get questions of, you know, we have this opportunity to work with this particular piece of talent. Can you help us figure out which of our networks and platforms it should be on? And, you know, where is it going to do the most heavy lifting for us in terms of either viewership or subscribers? So they're genuinely now asking questions that are helping to drive the business decisions, as opposed to vetting a decision that's already made. So that's kind of the main way that, you know, we find our partners working with us. But I'll go one step deeper, which is with a lot of the folks who are edging into the data science world and starting to marry these massive, you know, data sets about viewership and subscribers and all that. We're actually finding that some of our clients are taking Diesel data, integrating it into their own internal models to help them get smarter about, you know, creating internal segmentations and figuring out what to license and when, how, you know, where, et cetera. That was a very long answer, but I guess the reason I bring up all of these sort of variations on the theme is because we're learning a lot as we go with our clients as well. And that's part of the beauty of being a startup in this space right now. And so we're reasonably flexible, but we do have, you know, both the sort of data science and kit, if you will, as well as the self-serve products that are there for anyone to use.
Right. Fantastic. I love catching up with you because you're always pushing boundaries in such a smart way. And it's really been great. And thank you so much for taking the time to share your work and your thoughts about streaming and the content game with us. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you again for inviting me.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next. I'd like to close by thanking my production team at Up Next, my friend Rob Naughton, the voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, all of you, the members of our audience. Thank you. I'll be talking to you again next time, right here on Up Next.